I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
To Shaken and Disturbed, everyone. I'm Daddy Cat. Ooh, on the mic again this week.
Oh.
I'm trying not to sing because we talked about it in an NMR.
Well, listen, you can sing, just you don't want to get too up into the mic, but I liked how you kept your volume a little bit down.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
I modulated. I like it. Well, welcome to Shaken and Disturbed. I am Darren Karp, and I'm here with my husband, as Dan Savage always says, John Mama Bear, Thrashy Washy.
Another nickname?
J-Bone, Mama Cat, Thrashy Washy. Done. That's the full birth certificate name, the third.
I just wrote, I don't know if I wrote somebody or what I did on Patreon. I think it was on Patreon. And I like signed it at the end. I was like, John/J-Bone/Mama Bear. Slap. And I'm like, I have too many names on this show. Now you're adding Thrashy Washy, which sounds way too
close to
rash. So we're not doing that with monkeypox going around.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
Okay. But to get that rash away, you need to washy.
No.
Your
no, no, no.
Okay.
No. Well, we're moving right along.
Right Darren, along.
What are do you have? Yeah. Oh, look at us right on schedule here with what we're drinking.
Go ahead.
I'm just going to say, I'm not drinking any. I'm ladies first. I've got pickleball very soon tonight, so I don't want to be drinking. We're recording a little bit later in the evening than usual. But what are you drinking?
As we know, we tasted the Rockies.
That's right. You still have a sixer, don't you?
Still got a sixer. I think I only got through two last week. Mm-hmm. And they're blue. The mountains are blue.
I am enjoying
some more of that sixer that I bought last week for my Coors Light. So
love it.
I'm excited. But you know what? I got a few tricks up my sleeves for some drinks coming in the coming weeks.
All right. I love that. Yes, I do too. It's funny you say that because someone recently recommended this espresso martini recipe to me.
I never thought I was going to love an espresso martini.
Me either.
I had one recently and I was like, you can't have, I can have one. I don't
want
to have like three.
You're not
doing
a whole night of those for sure.
Like one is great, maybe two, but goddamn, they're good.
They are good. And I will say shout out to our former coworkers, Matt the bartender and Gina the staff boozer. Haven't said that in quite a while. For a martini, espresso martini recipe from back in the Martinis and Murder days. It was super yummy.
But
I'm really trying to do that. So I want to collect the recipe and like maybe do it next week or the week after that. I'm going to try it out. I love trying new things. By the way.
Can I just interrupt you for a second?
Yes.
Because, so someone sent you the espresso martini recipe, right?
Correct.
Okay, I also heard that because I get to work with Megan a lot.
You are working with Megan more. Yeah,
I'm working with Megan a lot more outside of this podcast. It's not like
details to come soon.
Details to come. But you know, Megan's a wild child, just like me. And I heard that you're trying.
Oh yes.
To get Megan to try our microdose Lumi gummies.
Oh my god. Okay, so I think
she's
been
like down.
She's very down. I mean, we've been talking about how great these things are for a while. I got one of my friends going with it. You've loved them. Did you say Nadine tried one, I think? Or am I making that up?
I'm trying to get her into it to help her sleep at night.
Oh, there you go. Perfect.
Fortunately, she's not here right now, but yes.
But whenever you can, yeah. So Megan liked the sound of these so much that she's going to try them too. So maybe she's going to try them and report back. I was saying, like, I'm trying to get everybody on board these Lumi microdose gummies. And one by one, everyone's kind of, like, realizing how great they are. So I'm sort of like the microdose fairy, if you will. You know, I'm just out here sprinkling the information
around. You're definitely a fairy. We know that.
We know that. Yes.
And if you're on our Patreon and listen to this week's NMR, you know that Daddy Cat, Mama Bear, and now Taxidermy Tina, which Megan's new name, are now all on this microdose experience. So clearly we're doing something right here.
That's right.
We're all geniuses. And our show today is actually sponsored by Microdose Gummies. Microdose Gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good.
I love that line. Microdose is available nationwide. And to learn more about microdosing THC, go to microdose.com and use code SHAKEN, and you can get free shipping and 30% off your first order.
Oh my God, links can be found in our show description. But again, that's microdose.com, code SHAKEN.
Darren, let's macrodose some interesting true crime. I don't know if that's a word. I shouldn't have said that. But all right, I'll say it. Macrodose.
Let's overdose on this murder here, okay?
That's an interesting way to put it. Yes, let's do it.
Yes, it is. In March of 1960, Colin Pitchfork was born in Leicestershire.
I think you got that right.
Correct me if I'm wrong, because it's Leicestershire. Yeah, like, I mean, like, what are you going to say?
Well, I'll say, here, let me ask you. How do you pronounce Leicestershire, England?
Okay.
Of course it was, here's what I found on the web. Never mind.
Yep. Well, whatever Siri said, England, and the middle child of three. So Colin Pitchfork, born in 1960, middle child of three. Colin graduated high school, enrolled in Bosworth College. But Bosworth always makes me think of Charlie's Angels with, like, Bill Murray being Bosworth.
Oh, yeah. Right? I forgot about that.
It was Bill Murray, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Like, back in, like, the Lucy Liu.
The 90s Cameron version,
Diaz,
yeah.
Cameron Diaz, Drew Barrymore. Is that the 90s? Or was it was early 2000s?
It was early 2000s. You're right. It was, like, probably 2000, like, literally 2000.
Like, one or 2000. Yeah, exactly.
Let
like
me look
early.
It up.
Okay.
Yeah, 2000. Perfect.
Oh, there
Look at us. Look at us.
So Colin graduates high school, rolls in Bosworth College, but abandoned his studies in 1976 and deciding instead to become a baker. He also found work at Hampshire Bakery, where he worked for the next 11 years while also doing volunteer work at a children's home. Guy seems pretty perfect. While volunteering, he met a social worker named Carol, and the two married in 1981 and had two sons together, the first in 1983, the second in 1986, which
my
is
year.
Mama Bear was born.
Mama Bear.
On November 21st, 1983, a 15-year-old girl named Linda Mann, let's Linda with a Y, was visiting a friend after school. Linda attended Lutterworth Grammar School and loved studying languages. She took French, Italian, and German. Lutterworth sounds so British to me, and
I am the
opposite of good at languages, except
really?
Bad English.
You seem like you'd be really good with language.
I tried Spanish and I took it for a while in school, but I just, you gotta practice, and like, people just have a knack for it in a way that I don't. Well, she also was the middle child of three sisters and was described by her friends as happy-go-lucky. Around 7:30 that evening, she left to see another friend in a nearby town before heading home.
That evening, Colin was taking care of his son. He happened to be driving down the road with the baby in the back seat when he came upon Linda as she walked alone along Forest Road to her friend's house. Now, already this is spooky to me. Like, it feels like it's the evening. There's a baby in the back seat. She's by herself. It's weird.
Yeah.
Well, Colin pulled over and got out of his car, leaving his son inside. Linda became frightened and started to flee when this unknown man approached her. Her fears turned out to be completely founded, by the way. Colin caught up with Linda, grabbed her, threw her down to the footpath, and raped her.
Jesus. Keep in mind, she's 15.
Yeah.
Not that it's okay. She's 65.
No, but
I'm just
kid,
saying she's 15. Yeah.
Well, in an attempt to get Colin to think better of what he was doing and perhaps save herself, Linda asked Colin, "What about your wife?" And this indicated to Colin that she had noticed his wedding band, which is, like, so smart. I mean, for anybody, let alone a 15-year-old in a traumatizing situation like that.
Yeah.
Well, after the incident, absolutely. Yeah, after the incident, Colin realized Linda had a lot of ways she could identify him. She'd seen his wedding ring, plus she'd gotten a look at his earring and the fact that he was losing his hair. So she got a pretty decent description of this man.
I'm looking at a picture of him right now, and there are, like, you know, definable features. It. Yeah.
Yeah. Colin also realized that as he and Carol, his wife, were planning to move to that area very soon, there was a very good chance Linda would see him in town and recognize him.
Mm.
So Colin then decided, I like your, I like that. I'm going to isolate that audio one day.
Yes. Well,
Colin then decided his only course of action was, of course, Darren, to murder Linda.
That's the only logical thing.
That's the only logical thing, yeah. So he strangles her with her own scarf and left her body on the footpath. Linda's body was found the next morning, but investigators were short on leads as to who might have killed her. There were evidence samples taken from Linda's body, and investigators were able to determine the killer's blood type. However, roughly 10% of the male population shared this blood type, so detectives didn't have much to go on. Now, remember, we mentioned at the top of the show, this is the early 80s. DNA forensic profiling definitely is not even a thing yet. It doesn't really come about for another 15 or so years, really. So Colin Pitchfork was, in fact, interviewed about Linda's death, and although he had no actual alibi, he told police that he was the sole carer for his baby son on the evening of her death. Police kind of found it unlikely that anyone would leave a baby alone. You know, remember, this is something that happened, even to commit rape and murder. So the police are kind of like, this guy's checking out.
I wonder for you, obviously completely hypothetical, one never know, but if she didn't say, what about your wife?
Yeah.
Do you think he would have killed her? Like, did she,
right.
Not that it's her fault, but did she spark in him
right,
the realization that he could be recognized because it's a small town and she, you know, saw the wedding band? Like, I'm so fascinated by that.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and I've been doing so much true crime stuff in my day job and otherwise, but like, I've heard of these kind of like horrifying rape stories where a lot of women and sadly young girls like this do that because they want to sort of de-escalate the situation.
Yeah, remind the guy of their humanity, like, for sure. She was obviously trying to do something to get her
to
out
save
of it.
Herself.
I'm not saying,
right.
I'm just wondering if that, like, sparked.
Oh, I know. It makes you wonder, yeah.
Well, in December of 1983, Colin, Carol, and their children moved to a village called Littlethrop, which is another
English town.
Littlethrop. Littlethrop, just a short distance from where the murder took place. Colin found more work as a local baker. And in February of 1984, Linda was buried at the local cemetery. About a year and a half later, October of 1985, Colin threatened a local girl with a screwdriver. She reported him for indecent assault, but he was never apparently apprehended. Very interesting. In July of 1986, 15-year-old Don Ashworth was on summer holiday, from Luttonworth Grammar School that we talked about before, the same school that Linda had attended several years prior. Now, Don was known as a mature and sensible person who enjoyed art, particularly drawing and painting. And on the afternoon of July 31st, Dawn went to visit some friends in a nearby town, but when she arrived, they weren't home. So she decided to walk back to her house.
Okay, so now she's walking, just like...
And she took like a small local footpath only a short distance from where Linda was killed. On her way, she happened to pass Colin riding his motorcycle, and Colin noticed Dawn entering the footpath and caught up with her. He grabbed her and exposed himself to her.
Flashed
her.
Which is like weird.
I never get that.
What's the point of it?
I had my friends in middle school and high school. My friends in middle school and elementary school were flashed by a local guy at memory in his car. Like, but I never understood that. God. Like, is it the sad? Like, everyone has their own kinks. So I'm not really talking about it being a kink.
Yeah.
But like, what is the satisfaction of like showing your penis to girls? Is it them being scared?
Well, let
them
me tell
disgusted?
You.
No. Yeah, you're like, from my experience.
No, I think it is. It's absolutely.
I mean, that's truthfully how you and I became friends.
That's how we
podcast.
Met.
Yes.
Absolutely. That's how we started our career.
I did show my penis to you and you were like, wow.
And I was like,
cool.
In.
You were like, yes.
I was like, let's work together. We've got to find a way. No, I think you were on the right track there. Not to make too much of a light of this particular situation, but
of
like
course.
Just creepy guys like this in general. Mm. It's like, I think that they just really get this satisfaction of like just simply exposing themselves. I mean, it's so disturbing and like it's
bizarre.
I mean, to be honest, it's probably mental illness, but it doesn't make it any less creepy that it's happening. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, you know, Dawn ran from Colin, obviously, after he exposed himself, and Colin chased her down, overpowered her, and raped her on the ground near the footpath. Once again, Colin strangled Dawn to prevent her from identifying him. You know, I feel like he could hide himself as opposed to killing them, but I digress. Yeah. And hid her body in the leaves and foliage off the trail. Mm. Dawn's body was found 2 days later, and once again, police had no solid leads as to who could have committed the murder. Dawn was buried in a local cemetery, and detectives became increasingly frustrated with their inability to catch the person preying on the young women in the town. It's obviously a small town, you know, and for it to happen to girls around the same age who also went to the same school is pretty terrifying. In an effort to find any new leads, authorities partnered with a television show called Crime Watch UK and presented a dramatic reenactment to the public in the hopes of jogging someone's memory.
This is like way before podcasts, you know, like
I know
we have all these like, you know, we think of Serial and of course all the different true crime shows that are out there now and how they've contributed some of them to the justice and solving of so many cases. This was sort of like the beginning steps of that in the UK.
Absolutely.
Well, eventually the police made an arrest for the murders on August 8th, 1986. 17-year-old Richard Buckland was taken into custody for the crimes and even confessed to Dawn's murder. However, Richard did not go to prison. His life was saved by a man named Alec Jeffries. Now, Alec was a scientist who studied genetics. Several years prior, in September of 1984, Alec had this sort of eureka moment in his lab when he realized he could view similarities in DNA strands among people from the same family. So this is sort of like a breakthrough into what we now know as modern forensic, you know, DNA testing.
Absolutely.
Within an hour, he realized he could use this to create a process we now refer to as DNA fingerprinting. It's the process we still use today to compare a suspect's DNA profile to evidence found at a crime scene to determine the likelihood of their guilt or innocence. Now, I love this stuff, first of all. Like, I love the Golden State Killer, the way he got caught. They, like, picked up some of his old trash. Like, I think it was, like, a pizza plate.
I mean, thank God for a pizza plate or like a cup. Like, thank God for technology and science. That's all I gotta say.
In its infancy, DNA fingerprinting was used in several immigration and paternity disputes, actually. Basically, you know, to prove the likelihood of familial relations. A lot of, you know, are you the father types of situations probably going on.
Sure.
But in 1986, this technique was used for the first time ever in a criminal investigation, which was in Linda and Dawn's murders. So that's an interesting fact about today's episode. Police were able to use Alex's DNA fingerprinting, basically to determine
isn't it Alex DNA fingerprinting?
Alex. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Wow. I have an English degree and I don't know how to say words. Interesting. Cool.
I took public speaking in college.
There you go. Cool. I didn't know that about you. That's interesting. That makes sense.
Yeah. Do you think I passed? Do you think I aced the class?
I think you got an A+. Yeah. Nonetheless, they took the DNA fingerprinting to determine that the blood samples left at the murder sites did not match Richard Buckland and that he was therefore not guilty of the crimes. And he was released on November 21st, 1986.
It's a good reminder that people can falsely confess to things that they didn't do if under duress or in a different pressure or for whatever fucking reasons. So confession doesn't necessarily mean guilt either.
And potentially, that's true. And potentially he made a plea deal here. We don't have the information right here, but maybe it was like, if you confess to this murder, we'll let you off earlier on this murder. So who knows? Also, we're talking about the UK here. So, you know, very different laws and jurisdictions that Darren and I, well, at least I am not privy to. Anyway, armed with... Darren's just really good at saying the names of the towns. That's about as far as we go. Yeah.
That's it.
Yep.
That's all I got.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well,
I'm qualified.
Well, armed with this new way of picking out potential suspects, authorities took blood samples from over 4,500 men in the area and extracted their DNA. I mean, imagine that, by the way. Just like going out and taking DNA samples of all these guys.
Yeah.
Well, Colin was one of the
men. That's why monkeypox exists in New York City, because you guys keep taking DNA samples out there.
Listen, that's neither here nor there.
Mm-hmm. That's it's definitely here. Let
that's
me tell you.
Shaken and disturbed after dark, if I've ever heard.
Yeah,
of that.
That is. Yes.
Well, anyway, Colin was one of the men who was asked to give blood, but he came up with a plan to avoid this capture. Colin worked at the bakery with a man named Ian Kelly, who I just want to say I went to high school with a guy named Ian Kelly. So it's very weird. It's a very, by the way, British or Irish name, Ian Kelly. You can't get much
Ian
more
Kelly.
Irish.
Yeah. Oh.
Oh, I think that was Australian, oh. babe. Yeah.
No,
Anyway, he convinced Ian to give blood in his place.
How you do that?
How
you
on earth?
I
don't know.
All right.
Well, here, I'm going to tell you some details. So the men swapped passport photos, and Ian was able to give blood without the police suspecting anything nefarious. So there's a lot of planning.
So they're not checking. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's banking on the fact that they're probably not going to be detail-oriented. Exactly. They're collecting however many 4,500 men in the area. You know, they're not.
Yeah.
They're just looking for a match. They're not looking at the details. Well, in August of 1987, the following year, Ian was out drinking in a pub and began speaking loudly about trading places with his friend Colin.
There you go.
This is why liquor is like truth serum in its own way. A woman at a nearby table overheard him and became concerned. She contacted the local police. Thank God for these people who were able to track down Ian for questioning.
And this is such, this put like, when I was reading the research, I was like, this put something in my head. I'm like, if I were in this woman's position, like Darren, you and I have gone out to several bars, several scenarios in the city over the years, New York and otherwise. And I'm like, if I were in that exact same position and I'm overhearing some drunken guy talking about he switched passports and gave blood.
Right,
like,
well, I'm not sure I would pick up.
Would
on
I
it.
Do? Yeah, like would I even pick up that there was a crime going on, let alone go and report it? So kudos to this woman for that.
Yeah,
reason.
Kudos to this woman. But if you're in a smaller town, if you're concerned, especially as a woman, for you have young kids, maybe you're just gonna, you know, your ears are gonna be perked a little bit. But yes,
fair.
Either way, at least she heard it and then took action.
Yeah, for sure. So congrats to her. That's great.
So frightened that he might get in trouble, Ian admitted to the police that he had given blood in Colin's place. Mm. On September 19th, authorities arrived at 27-year-old Colin's home and arrested him for the murders of Linda and Dawn. Colin immediately confessed, as well as to the additional indecent assaults he had committed in the area. I almost wasn't expecting him to...
I wouldn't expect that, given all the circumstances.
To confess.
Yeah.
Colin told authorities that he only meant to expose himself to the young women, but when they ran for him... ran from him, he chased them down and raped them.
I don't know that that's how that goes.
I'm not confident that's how that goes. Yeah. But as if that's better.
Yeah, right.
I only wanted to show them my dick, but then they resisted because they did it, so
things.
I raped them.
Right,
yeah, like that seems a little odd. He went on to state that he only murdered them to prevent them from identifying him. All right, so that's justified killing.
But like...
it's just violent.
Okay, yeah, keep going. I just want to smash my microphone right now, but keep going.
On January 22nd, 1988, Colin's trial began for two counts of murder, two counts of rape, plus two counts of indecent assault. Colin immediately pled guilty to both crimes and was sentenced to life in prison for the murders, plus an additional 10 years for the two rape charges, 3 years for the indecent assault charges, and 3 years for conspiracy to prefer justice.
Yeah.
By swapping places with Ian Kelly to avoid giving a blood sample.
Well, I'm glad they charged him for that.
Well, thank God, because that's like, talk about that, like breaking the law in every sort of way. I mean, that's fucking, that's like, you know, obstruction of justice.
Yeah.
This carried a minimum sentence of 30 years in prison.
Wow.
So, boy is away for a while, and Ian Kelly was issued a suspended sentence of 18 months for giving blood in Colin's place.
Yeah, I mean, 18 months, I'm trying to think if that's satisfying enough. You know, sentence, but it is what it is, I guess. I guess that's not super egregious. But when you think of the ramifications of it, my goodness, you know.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Well, years later in 2008, Colin was given permission to appeal his sentence, and in 2009, his minimum sentence was reduced from 30 years to 28 years. Not sure I agree with that.
But also not a big...
not a huge jump, but still.
Yeah, agreed.
So years later, only just last year, Darren, on June 7th, 2021, Colin, now 61 years old, was granted parole after spending 33 years in prison. So he got reduced to 28 for the, I guess, the more harsher crimes.
Yeah.
But ended up spending, for whatever other reasons, 33 years in prison. His parole was granted with a set of 35 conditions that he must... follow for the rest of his life in order to maintain his freedom. If he violates any one of these 35 orders, authorities must bring him back to prison. We have a couple of these conditions here.
And remember, I think it was last week's case with the Rockies. Remember, like, he gets out of prison and then he breaks it to go with the bank. And we were like, dude, like an absolute moron.
Isn't that like a great example of just how fucking stupid these people are that go and kill people?
Sometimes people can't help themselves in so many ways. Yeah.
So one of the conditions is living at a designated address. So they were like, listen, you're not, you know, because you have to think about how these crimes occurred, right? Like, he's driving around, they're outside, they're walking down paths. They're thinking, you can come out of jail, sure, but we're going to put you somewhere where you cannot be around people, probably. Right. That's my assumption, at least.
Well, and also, you don't want him moving around, because then he's going to do this in other places. And if he moves to the United States,
then he's on the run, and then you got to worry about extradition, and that's a whole other problem. Another condition was he had to take part in probation supervision. That's obvious. That happens a lot. He had to be, he had to submit to lie detector tests, which I think is interesting all these years later. I mean, in the United States, at least, we've moved away from lie detector tests in the way that we used to in like the early days of our country and in the last couple decades, where, you know, there was a time where lie detector tests sometimes made or broke cases.
Yeah, absolutely.
So to hear this in the UK, that's really interesting. Another one which I think is interesting, which is conforming to curfews. So I guess certain days of the week, certain maybe times of the year, certain maybe even holidays, this man has to be home in his house, you know, on a curfew.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, which I really love the next one, restrictions on his technology use. Basically, he has parental controls put on all of his devices. You may not use the computer for more than X amount of hours, or his phone, whatever.
I wonder what his kids, or his son, rather. Like, I wonder what his son thinks about
all
this.
Yeah, really. Another thing, disclosing any personal information authorities deem relevant to public safety, including which vehicles he uses, who he speaks to, and where he goes. So they are on him, like... This is find my friends, but like find my convict. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You're going to know exactly where this guy is. And of course, thankfully, he may only have limited contact with children. I don't know why he has no contact with children, but okay, limited contact. That's something at least somewhat better.
Maybe because he had a child?
Potentially. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, Colin's release created, as you might imagine, an enormous public outcry in Britain as a large outspoken group of citizens didn't believe releasing a child rapist and murderer was in the best interest of public safety. Yeah.
True.
Not sure I would either. Yeah, that's true. Nonetheless, Colin was released in September of 2021, so less than a year ago at this point. In November of the same year, are you ready for this? Colin was rearrested and brought back to prison. For breaking one of the conditions of the parole, Darren, and he was caught on several occasions, quote, approaching young women in the vicinity of his home. Remember, he couldn't be around young people or even really be talking to anybody.
Or doing anything sussy, and this is literally why he went to prison, which also goes to show to me that this is, like, outside of any rationality.
Not that
raping would be any type of that, but just, like, it almost feels like one of these things where it's like he like literally cannot help it.
No, for sure. I mean, you can feel the mental illness across the board with this. Well, Colin has another parole hearing set for the fall of this year. So there's more details to come on this particular episode. At present, the parole board Colin will speak to has a release rate of 25%, meaning the vast majority of prisoners who come before this board are not set free. I'm of the mindset, Darren, I think you are too, that we hope he stays behind bars at this point.
Yeah.
And there's still a lot of call from the public for Colin to be kept in prison, as you might imagine. And but the way this case unfolds remains to be seen. Darren, I'm not against hopping on a flight, flying over to Littlethorpe, England, or whatever it's called, and, you know, protesting to keep these types of assholes behind bars.
Well, it even says, because this case is obviously kind of contemporary as I'm looking it up, basically this British Conservative Party politician, this guy named Alberto Costa, he's basically refusing, he opposes releasing Pitchfork into the public right now. So, you know, I think there's a lot of things happening. Obviously, like, defamation lawsuits are really hard to win in Britain. Johnny Depp didn't win that, but he won in the United States. So it's kind of like any given Sunday at different courts, we can't say for sure. But I definitely think because he re-offended, that doesn't look great for his release.
No. No, when you've done everything you've done and then you were given a chance at parole and then you still fucked up. No.
Right.
But who knows? Yeah. That's the thing about you, what you just said. You just never know what's going to happen. So I think what we'll do is we'll release an update to this in the coming weeks once his parole hearing is had. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to see what happens. Well, let's end, obviously, on a positive note. I'm going to take the first listener shout out.
Okay.
Alexandria posted a picture of John's favorite Cheez-It Poofties.
Poofties.
And said, NMR, I'm having my daily Cheez-Its for breakfast. Follow me for more healthy eating tips, which made me laugh. And the back of the box made me think of mom and dad, if you know, you know. I think I wrote back Breakfast of Champions.
That's right.
This post.
That's right.
So it makes sense. And listen, in college, I used to take boxes of Cheez-Its and I dipped them in balsamic vinegar. And that was like my dinner. So literally no shame.
Oh, my God.
John, keep moving on. John, next listener shout out,
please. Hold on. Hold on.
Keep moving. My mom is listening to this. So
good.
I don't
Cheez-Its with
just dip it in like balsamic vinegar.
Sounds so good.
Doesn't it?
No, I'm reacting like I want to try that.
Oh my God, it actually is like a good snack.
We're doing a true crime podcast. Like, should we do a snack podcast? Oh,
like let's just rebrand.
Yeah. Oh, we can call it a whole snack. Like you and I are a whole snack. Okay, anyway, moving on, because this is not what people signed up for.
This will be Eaten and Beaten by John Brasher and
Darren. Oh, my God. So good.
So good.
I'm just going to say, I think it's time to address our fans, if that's what we want to call them, Darren. Okay. We want to highlight our Twitter friend, Rick, who recently tweeted, "Hey, at Cheez-It, at Jay Thrasher and at Carpe Darren are obsessed with you. They would love you. They would love for you to sponsor them." And I just want to say, Rick, you were the only person after last week's NMR episode, I believe it was on NMR we said this, who actually went onto Twitter and tweeted to Cheez-It and asked them to sponsor. So I feel like, Darren, should we say that of all of the children that we have across the board in our fan base?
Of all the radishes, he's the most delicious radish.
He's the most delicious radish. So, Rick, if you're listening, thank you. To everyone else, we're waiting for your tweets. I don't know what else to say.
I'm waiting for your feedback on Cheez-Its and balsamic vinegar.
Well, that'll be next week's episode for sure. Yeah.
Anything to help that. That's going to be a new t-shirt, I'm sure, that's going to come
feels
soon.
Feels like it. Feels
designed
like
designed from John. And that's a good reminder because
we
have merch, people. And of course, if you want your own t-shirt, hoodie, pillow, notebook, tote, whatever you
want. Phone case. Stickers.
You know, tattoos.
You name it.
Click the link to our merch store in the show notes of this episode. Make sure to tag us on social when you've received it because we would love to share.
Absolutely. And the best way you can support the show is by directly signing up for... Let me redo that. And the best way you can support the show directly is by signing up to become a Patreon subscriber. You can get bonus episodes, discount codes for merch, and so much more for as little as $5 a month. Darren, I recently posted a couple screenshots of us recording... hoping people would help caption that. So we've been doing some fun stuff like that. But if, you know, if $5 is too much, you can even get it cheaper than that if you sign up annually. And you, also, by the way, guys, if you rate, review, and subscribe us, it would be a lot. It would be amazing, actually, because it helps us get discovered. Darren, you usually remind us of that. So sorry, I kind of stepped on you there. But
no, I'm glad you did. That's an important reminder. It doesn't matter which one of us reminds it. But of course, we have to thank Taxidermy Tina.
A.K.A. Megan
for the show, because she always does great research. So, uno, dos, tres.
Thanks, Megan. Thanks, Tina.
We love you guys. We love you all. And we'll see you next week for another fresh NMR and a fresh new episode, also known as our snack.
Moments later.
That's right. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt
you. No, I just snack broadcast.
Actually, you interrupted you that time.
Yeah, actually, that's a fair point. Yeah.
Which happens from time to time.
Yeah, it happens.
All right, bye, everybody.
Bye.